Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host. Joining me on this episode is Chris Marshall of the Collected Comics Library for a look at the June 2007 sales estimates for the graphic novels, trade paperbacks, and hardcovers. First off, I want to congratulate you, Chris, on being nominated for the 2007 People's Choice Podcast Award in the general category.
Thanks, John.
Should I start referring to your Collected Comics Library podcast as the award-nominated Collected Comics Podcast?
Yes, award-nominated. I did not win. I'll take nominated, though. That sounds good.
You totally deserve the nomination. You're doing a great job there. And let me know who won, and, you know, we'll talk to some people, and we'll see what we can do about getting you a win next year.
Exactly.
And you were in good company. Around Comics got nominated in one of the other categories, and
Geek Syndicate and the Comic Book Queers. So four of us were represented in various categories. So it was pretty good. It's good, you know, to get the word out about comics podcasts and everything. So,
no, that's great, particularly since you were doing it in the various categories and not all pigeonholed into a comic book category. So
right.
That's awesome. What do you say we take a look, starting with the market shares, and see how things look this month?
Cool, let's do it, yeah.
The last couple of months, we've been seeing some really interesting stuff on the market shares, particularly with Marvel dominating everything thanks to Civil War. This month, we're pretty much back to how it was prior to April and May, where we saw those oddities. Back to more of an even split. Marvel had a little under 30% of the market share by units for the top trades and collected editions, and 37% by dollars. Now, that discrepancy is mainly because of a few high-ticket items like the Fantastic Four Omnibus, which was nearly a $100 price tag there.
With an Omnibus, they also had the movie to help sell that book.
There is that.
Yeah.
I totally spaced on that. You are correct.
Mm-hmm.
That was excellent timing on their part. DC did about 25%, a little over by units, and just under 27% by dollars. This is kind of par for the course for them, but again, a lot closer to how Marvel was doing this month, compared to the huge differences we were seeing in past months. Other one I want to point out is Dark Horse. Dark Horse did very strong this month in the trade sector with about 17.25% of the market share by units and a little under 16% by dollars. Now, their total dollars, looking at full cover price just as a barometer, was around $765,000 and $100. This is pretty much within arm's reach of how they're doing on the comic book side, which for the month was around $843,500. Again, doing better on the comic side, as one would expect, but it's really interesting how Dark Horse seems to be about the only publisher doing, you know, within arm's reach on the two different sides of the market, which I find very interesting.
Well, I'm just looking at the numbers right now, and I noticed that Viz Media came fourth overall, but yet for total dollars, they actually came in well below the Image doing better in total dollars, and same with IDW.
Right. I rank these by units,
right,
which is also how Diamond does it, with the theory being that units are more important.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is Viz came in that fourth place with six items. These days, particularly on the trade side, it just takes a handful of strong selling items to do very well. Now, the other thing that's kind of interesting for Viz is look at that price range they did that in.
Yeah.
Their lowest price item was $7.95. Their highest item was $8.99. This is clearly the strength of manga being shown and really demonstrated on how, you know, low price point items can be fairly successful.
I also find it interesting that Marvel, if you look at the total number of items, they had 24 to DC's 22. And among those, the reorder items, four of them for Marvel and three of them for DC. The more books, the higher the numbers, then the more market share they're going to get. Do you agree with that?
Well, certainly, I mean, the more things you have out there, the better off you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little harder to really say that with Marvel and DC, certainly with Image, because these are the ones where we're going to see a lot more reorder activity. A matter of fact, in this particular month, Marvel had four items of reorder, DC had three, Image had four, and the only other publishers that had any were Dark Horse, Dynamite, and Del Rey with one reorder item each.
Right.
Typically with the reorder stuff, that's going to be lower on the list. That's just nature of the beast. A lot of the reorder stuff drops off beneath the visibility of the top 100 list, which is unfortunate. And really only, like I said, Marvel, DC, and Image are likely to kind of, you know, really break through that with anything. So that kind of skews the total items. And really, I think we're getting to the point, I'm going to say more with DC than Marvel, that the number of items isn't going to be as big of a help. The trend I'm starting to notice, and I really noticed this in the latest previews, covering stuff that'll get released in October, DC is doing a lot with miniseries, and every one of those miniseries is almost guaranteed to get compiled into a trade paperback, probably in the near term versus the longer term, and I don't think a lot of those are going to do particularly brilliant on the trade side. I'm not sure how well some of them are going to do on the monthly side either. What we're seeing is Marvel just has a few more items this month, but the items they have, I think, are inherently stronger. But the Fantastic Four second omnibus, again, timed with the movie, that's just going to be a strong seller just by the nature of it. They're going back to the foundation of the Marvel Universe. That if that doesn't do well for them, they're sunk. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
And I think what DC has to pick from, the material's not as inherently strong. That's going to hurt them. Part of the reason I say that is nothing to do with the specific material, but more the nature of miniseries versus ongoing series. Historically, if you look at the demand trends, as witnessed not only by how the issues initially sell, but also if you look at how the prices get reflected over time in, like, Overstreet's price guide, miniseries tend to hit strong, maybe go up a little after their first out, and then drop. They don't retain their value over time because there's nothing to keep the demand going. So once some of these miniseries end, any demand there is now, which in some cases is questionable at best, may dry up entirely. We're getting to the point where there are so many different trades out there and collected editions out there, stores can't carry them all. I don't think a lot of stores necessarily want to carry them all, even if they could. I think we're getting to the point where there are almost too many options, and that's hurting a lot of the lesser items. It's going to be interesting to see how some of this pans out.
Yeah, the market definitely gets saturated by all these miniseries, and that we saw was Civil War. And those trades sold actually very well, and they're selling well. We're going to see on the list right here. So
they're selling well, but now that that kind of wave is over, Marvel's back down to how it had been. So for the last 2 months, where it was doing the just insane market shares of around, I guess it was 47 and 49% last month, and about 56 and 51% by units and dollars the previous month, they're back down to around where it was back in March, which was back in the 30 to 26% by units and dollars. A lot of what was boosting them was that concentrated influx of the Civil War trades. That, of course, is certainly good for the short term. The question is, how does that do in the long term for them? Are we going to see these things coming back, or is it going to be a grab it while you can?
Regarding Civil War, did you hear out of the Wizard World Chicago, they are going to start making the Civil War hardcovers?
Yes, I did hear about that.
And I mentioned on my latest podcast, you know, between the trade paperbacks that we've seen the last couple of months, and now the reprint, quote-unquote, of Civil War Chronicles in the monthly form, and now hardcovers, I mean, it's just, you know, so much. I mean, I said on my show, I'm done with Civil War. I'm so over it. But yet Marvel's just going to keep on stuffing it in our faces, I think, for the next at least a year.
Yeah, when I first heard about the reprint version where they do it in chronological order, I'm like, gee, too bad they couldn't do that the first time.
Yeah.
But particularly, it was going to last a year.
Yes, it's going to last a year.
I mean, there's been a lot of talk and discussion of, are people hitting event fatigue? No, they're not. Yes, they are. Whatever. Certainly, I think there are signs that we are not at that point yet. Witness how well World War Hulk is doing. But I think, particularly with the reprints of Civil War, the upcoming hardback, and dragging the life cycle of that project out even further, that I think increases the risk of event fatigue, at least for that particular event. And I think once you get it for any one, there's definite risk of it bleeding over to others. But between that and Countdown, which again has a year-long kind of thing, and some people were viewing that as almost an extension of 52 in some respects, that we haven't hit the point of people saying enough's enough, I'm dropping all events. But as a publisher, would you really want to do anything that even invites that kind of action to happen? And I think that both Marvel and DC are starting to do that. The difference is it's working for Marvel and it's not working for DC.
We'll see in the next few months if it works, because DC, it's like you said a few months ago, all these little mysteries that are going to be popping up that are pseudo-related Countdown. And, you know, I'm not getting fooled by it. I'm not buying those. I mean, I'm buying Countdown, and I'm buying JLA and JSA and the major titles, but I'm not going to be fooled into getting some six-issue series like they did in near 52 with the Martian Manhunter series, the Shazam miniseries that they did. They did it before a year and a half ago, and I didn't get sucked into it then, and clearly those didn't sell that well, even.
Well, the mistake that I think it's made with that is whenever you do something again, like the Martian Manhunter one, which was 8 issues, the Trial of Shazam one, which was 12, all of these that are miniseries, it further encourages the wait for the trade. Anyone who's on the fence on that, it's 8 issues. They will collect that. With an ongoing, it's very, very, very likely, but not guaranteed.
Or they're not going to collect all those issues. Issue number 6 and just keep on going with the storyline.
Exactly. They may skip one or two here and there. There have been a few where they rearrange the order of the issues. Well, they'll skip one and toss it into a later trade, or just skip it entirely. Not only does that encourage the wait for the trade with the miniseries, but it reinforces the at least subconscious preconception that these are all temporary things. I'll just wait for the next batch for something I'm really interested in. Doesn't encourage people to get invested into the properties when it's clear from the publisher standpoint they're not heavily invested into the property. I think we're going to see that in one or two cases when we talk about the Trial of Shazam stuff.
Right.
And again, when I was going through the latest previews, it felt like with DC, like a third or maybe of the mainstream DC, excluding Vertigo, all the various other imprints and stuff, but a third of them were miniseries, possibly up to a half. I haven't counted, but an alarming number of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that just gives, at least to me, a sense of almost a lack of confidence that the publisher has in their material.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think they're trying to send that message, but certainly when I see a bunch of things, oh, we'll try this for 10 issues, or we'll try this for 8, or 6, or 4, or 2, or whatever, I gotta wonder if they thought it just wasn't gonna last beyond that, and figured they'd go ahead and cut their losses from the get-go.
Well, that's something that kind of irks me with the major events. This has been done a million times, but when they add like an Amazon's Attack, which I'm enjoying right now, actually, but when they do like a tie-in issue, they put it up on the marquee, Amazon's Attack tie-in issue, and then you read that issue, and only maybe a quarter to a third of the book is even related to Amazon's Attack storyline.
Yeah, but this is nothing new.
No, it's nothing new at all. But then they, I guess if it's important enough to have that marquee, then it should be important enough to add into the main storyline and make it a bigger storyline than
that's
it is.
Fair. That's fair.
You know?
And just because it's not new doesn't mean it's good. I mean,
no.
It was bad back
right.
when Crisis on Infinite Earths did it.
20-plus years later, those extra tie-in Crisis stories have never been collected.
Yeah.
You know?
The best they've done is made a list of them in the Crisis Crossover Index, which I believe that information was reprinted in the slipcase hardcover.
Yeah. Be a nice trade. Keep on waiting for that trade to come out.
Oh, God. There'd be no point to that.
No, but it'd be cool to have.
Yeah, if they did two. One that had basically all the various pages that had the monitor showing up before Crisis,
mm-hmm.
and then one that had all the Red Sky pages during Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be kind of, disjointed and whatnot, but hey, so was Crisis.
Oh, very much. Then you could have a little guidebook that would come with it, whether it be in the back
yeah.
or the front, and say, okay, All-Star Squadron, this is where this story fits into Crisis. And you can find these issues on eBay or in dollar bins.
Prelude to Crisis, one of the trades they did took a couple of pages here and there before Infinite Crisis,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, hey, here's 3 pages from The Flash, here's 2 pages from this issue of a Superman title or whatever.
Cool, I like that. Because that really whets your appetite.
That would probably be a smart move for DC to do,
mm-hmm.
if they can do it in a manner that really encourages the, see, we have this overall tapestry of events going on, and there's some depth there. If you want to go dig and find it.
Mm-hmm.
The one that really floored me, going back to your comment about having it on the marquee and not really tying in, I'm a couple of weeks behind on my reading, and I was reading stuff that came out first week of July, and there was a issue of one of the Superman titles on the cover. It was clearly tied into that week's Countdown with 41, or first page. Yeah, this takes place before issue 42 of Countdown. You should have come out
yeah.
a week earlier,
yeah.
damn it. I am getting really confused on the timeline of certain events, particularly dealing with the Superman and the Countdown stuff, what happened when. It's publish them in the damn right order. Because
yeah.
if they come out with a
yeah.
Countdown Chronicles next year, I'm not buying it.
Same thing happened with Amazon's Attack. You read Wonder Woman, Amazon's Attack, and then I had a Teen Titans issue. I read them all backwards.
Oh, God.
I'm like, okay, you'd think you'd read this one, and you get halfway through, and like, see Wonder Woman number, 5 or whatever it was. And I was like, Oh my God. And so I went back and I read Wonder Woman number 5, and it said, okay, and then halfway through it said, okay, read Teen Titans number whatever it was. And I'm like, oh jeez. You know, I'm like so backwards. It was comical.
It's driving me nuts because since I'm behind, since, you know, we've got Countdown going on, since we've got World War Hulk, since we've got the endangered species stuff with X-Men, since we've got kind of concurrent storytelling going on across titles, normally I would just say, okay, I'll pick a title and catch up. I'm going kind of week by week on things. And I got no idea what order to read some of the books in a given weekend. And it's like, come on, give me a checkoff list. Give me something. If they can't have planned out the story to where I can read them in a particular order and follow, but they all kind of interweave haphazardly, it's frustrating from the perspective of a reader, and I have no idea how they could put this into a trade coherently.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I don't want to go to a forum or Wikipedia to find my proper reading order. It should be listed in the book.
Even if it's not in the book, put it on a postcard, include it, yeah. You know, give it to the stores to give away.
Yeah.
That way you can update it if you need to.
Exactly.
I don't care. But, I mean, it's kind of like what they're doing with the Jack Kirby's Fourth World Omnibus, where they're taking the events from the different titles and putting them in chronological order so you can follow what's going on. I don't see how they could really do that with some of what's going on with either DC or Marvel at the moment.
Well, yeah, we're reading Fourth World. You can't, you know, there's no way, I don't think there's any way they could do it any other way but to print it in chronological order.
I think it's a smart move.
I think it's a smart move, too, because it's funny because you read the Jimmy Olsen stuff, and you read the Jimmy Olsen stuff, and then there's it's the Orion stuff, and Superman, at the end of one issue, is, like, tied up fighting a villain underground, and then in the beginning of the next issue, he's out flying around with one of the characters, and you're like, okay, wait, what just happened? But you couldn't have that four-issue story and then go to the next four-issue story, and you couldn't, you know, read the Mr. Miracle altogether. You couldn't do that. It wouldn't make any sense, really. Because ultimately, when Volume 4 comes around, it's all going to make sense. And Kirby wrote those all, you know, knowing what he was going to do. So
yeah.
He was no dummy. He knew what he was doing.
Well, single writer, you've got a certain degree of inherent continuity. Not flawless, but I mean, just like when Stan Lee was doing most of the Marvel stuff in the early days. It's not all going to jive 100% because he's human, he makes mistakes, but it's a lot easier to coordinate with yourself than, you know, everybody else writing every other book for the publisher. I don't know. I don't think we've hit the point of event fatigue, but I think these things that are getting challenging as to what order do I read stuff in, their minor frustrations, whatever, I don't know how many more years of this the readers are going to put up with. And if and when we hit a breaking point, that could be very, very interesting to watch how it impacts on the sales and how quick that tide may turn, if it does turn at all.
Right.
Shall we start taking a look at the actual items on the list?
Yeah, let's get to it.
Let's start up at the top with number one. This is, I don't think, any surprise to either of us. It is volume number 9 of Fables, Sons of Empire. It came in at 12,000 and about 161 units. This volume not only opens stronger than any previous volume, but has already outperformed volumes 3 through 6. If any reorder activity shows up on this list for the future for this item, it's almost certainly going to beat out volumes 2 and probably 7 and 8 as well. This series continues to do very well in the trade format, which is really, I don't think, any surprise to anybody.
It seems like we got a Fables trade every month when we do this show.
They show up on the list frequently.
Yeah.
We obviously aren't getting new trades every month. Previous issues usually pop up down on the list somewhere. Because, you know, either the first one's going to do some reorder activity or the second or something like that. And part of it is, I mean, this is 12,000 units. And if you look at how the monthly series is doing, it's doing, as of issue 61, around 26,000 units on the monthly side, which is not an all-time high, but pretty damn close. So, I mean, you compare that 26,000 to this 12,000, and these trades are doing really well. Not a big surprise for a Vertigo book. This is standard for how they tend to skew on where the sales go. But, you know, it topping the list, I'm not the least bit surprised. Doing it by a fairly significant margin, again, doesn't surprise me. We usually see them at the top of
right,
the list.
Right. The next book is also very good.
It is, and it's funny because there's one further down the list that I want to kind of use as a counterpoint to this. Number 2, Hulk, Planet Hulk, the hardcover. It came in at 9,111 units. Obviously, this was excellent timing on Marvel's part to get this hardcover out in time to benefit from the hype of World War Hulk, which, of course, spun out directly out of this. In a lot of months, obviously, this would have been a top seller. It's interesting that we've got, what, a 3,000-unit gap between this and Fables, with Planet Hulk, again, being the precursor to the current big event for Marvel right now. Now, what's interesting is if you jump down to item 52 in the list, we've got the Incredible Hulk, Planet Hulk, Prelude trade paperback.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, this is reorder activity, and the activity for June was 2,174 units. But the total activity, which includes the previous month and maybe even the one before that, put it at a total of 4,561 units. Now, is it just me, or does that seem kind of low, given that this is the initial setup for the current World War Hulk crossover, and again, leads directly into the events in that other hardcover up above?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a pretty good story. It didn't really need to be packaged in Planet Hulk at all. I mean, did you read the Prelude?
Oh, yeah, I've been reading Hulk since a little after issue 300. So, yes, I've read that. Now, was that other story also in one of the hardcovers?
No, not that I recall. It was just in a trade.
It's what led into the Planet Hulk stuff, which is, again, what led into the World War Hulk.
Yeah.
I got to give Marvel a lot of credit for this. Not only was that Prelude story really good, Planet Hulk storyline was really good, and the World War Hulk crossover they're doing is really well done. Now, granted, it gets a little repetitive when you read everything and you get the okay. Here's the hologram of the Hulk saying he's going to go, you know, smash stuff, whatever, you know.
Right.
Because they've got to set the scene in all the books because not everybody's reading everything. I get that. I'm okay with that. And it's about the only thing I would consider even a minor gripe about the thing. But they handle it well in all of the books. I'll give them credit for that. This is such a accessible storyline. Another easy pitch to explain to people like Civil War was. Marvel is doing that right with their events.
I'll tell you what. You want to know when this came out?
Sure.
March 8th of 2006.
Wow.
And it collected Hulk 88 through 91 and the Hulk Handbook 2004.
Now, if it's been out that long and the total recorded sales I have are 4,600, that just seems low.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that this is something that there was more reorder activity but kind of flew beneath the radar. In other words, it may have been kind of a slow and steady seller over time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that it showed up in the year-end top trades for last year with the indication of activity that didn't show up on the monthly list. But I'm scanning the year-end list for 2006 and I am not seeing anything with the Hulk in it. Much less that one. So that at least means that the total known sales through 2006 would have been under, say, 3,200 units, which would fall kind of in line with what we're thinking. I'm very surprised by that. Mm-hmm. I don't consider even the total it's at now of the 4,600 to be particularly stellar sales, again, for something that is the clear groundwork for a major event.
Yeah.
Do you think part of the issue for that may have been that it just was too early, almost too far back? You know what I mean?
I think that part of it was people didn't know how big Planet Hulk was going to be and how good it was going to be.
But now that Planet Hulk is out and World War Hulk is out.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see it not doing well initially. This is one that I could easily see the reorders dwarfing the initial opening numbers.
Yeah.
But we're not seeing that. It'll be curious as we start to see the World War Hulk trades hit the list in the future, if we see some of both the Planet Hulk Prelude and the Planet Hulk hardcover and stuff coming back on the list.
Yeah, because I imagine with the success of Planet Hulk hardcover, they're going to make World War Hulk a hardcover, don't you think?
I would think so.
Or are there too many books, you think?
Well, if it depends how they do it.
Yeah.
If they just do the mini-series, they could easily do that as a hardcover. What they will probably do is follow suit with what they did with Civil War.
Yeah.
Kick it out as a trade where you can do trades of all the various crossover stuff, then do a hardcover of the core mini-series. I think it would annoy some people if they come out with a hardcover for World War Hulk and then trades for, like, the World War Hulk Frontline, X-Men,
right,
and all,
right,
the other crossover,
right,
stuff.
One interesting note, I heard that I think it was on Augie's podcast, that the World War Hulk crossover with the Ant-Man and his issue is, like, selling like crazy on the secondary market.
Hmm, interesting.
Because you just didn't get that printed. There was a high print run or something, you know, because Ant-Man was canceled by then. And so I guess that is one hot book to get.
I believe it. I believe it. Because, yeah. I mean, Ant-Man was really just not doing all that well in
no.
sales.
No.
It was doing, with issue 9, which I think would have been one or two before the World War Hulk, it was only doing about 15,500 units.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a lot.
So, no, that's something that, I mean, when you compare how World War Hulk number 1 did of 178,300,
yeah,
you only need 1 in 100 of those people to want that Ant-Man thing, and suddenly it's all gone.
Yeah, it's all gone, and it's hot. people buy two or three copies and throw it up on eBay.
Yeah, that's unfortunate because to me that implies a bit more of a spectator presence in the market than I'm comfortable with.
Right.
And I mean, I got no problem with people trying to make their money, trying to do that, if that's what they like. It's just if it's to a noticeable degree, it implies to me that if we either hit event fatigue or something else happens that causes that collector bubble or whatever to burst, we could lose a few thousand readers or speculators or whatever you want to call them. And I think if it would take as little as 5,000 to 10,000 readers lost in that kind of a situation to cancel a lot of books really quick. I think 5,000 or 10,000 people lost is very, very realistic, if not very low, in terms of an estimate.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it could happen.
I think that would be, I don't want to say catastrophic, but really, really not good. So hopefully I'm totally wrong on that. I will be happy to be wrong on that one.
Move on?
Yeah. Ultimates 2, Volume 2, Grand Theft America. This is a trade paperback that did 8,830 or so units. That's down about 4,623 units from the first volume, which is about a 34% or so drop. This collection was nearly 2 years in the making. And, I mean, all in all, it did fairly well given how long it took the component issues to kind of trickle out over time. I mean, they came out on a nearly quarterly basis until the last issue, and that last one shipped about 8 months, you know, after the previous one. Now, ironically, that lateness didn't really seem to hurt the series in the quote-unquote monthly format. The sales for the component issues dropped from 7 to 8 to a low point with issue 9, and then started to climb back up to peak with that final issue, which again was 8 months, you know, down the line from the previous one. It's worth noting that issues 7 and 12 did roughly the same number of units, which is around, you know, 99,150 to about 99,525-ish or so. But issue 12 brought in about $100,000 more dollars because of the higher cover price. So that's one where kind of that delay and the rising of the prices kind of, you know, worked in Marvel's favor, I guess. Comparing the trade to how the monthlies did in terms of dollars, this trade brought in less than half the money that that 12th issue alone did. And I find that kind of really interesting because the delay didn't seem to really impact the monthly too badly. We're seeing a huge drop on the comparison of the opening numbers for the second trade to the final numbers for the first. Granted, it'll make some of that up over time because not everybody gets it first month out. But some people are saying, oh, you know, I wish they'd just go straight to trade. Now, I've been saying for a long time that I think eventually the market is going to move that way. I'm seeing a lot of signs of monthlies going down, people being, you know, more interested in trades, buying more trades, etc. Yet here's a clear case where a number 3 selling trade for the month, which I think you would agree, Chris, that 8,800 units for a trade, respectable numbers, good opening numbers.
Oh, very much, yeah.
And it brought in less than half the money of one particular issue that was in that trade.
Well, I don't know why Marvel doesn't realize what a great property this is and why don't bring it out quicker. I mean, I looked it up. Volume 1 of Ultimates 2, Gods and Monsters, came out August 31st, 2005. The trade came out in August 31st, 2005.
Yeah.
I mean, that just tells you, I mean, it's been so long. And, you know, it's funny, just kind of, it's kind of on topic. You know, how come a title like Ultimate Spider-Man and Ultimate X-Men can have the longevity, but the Ultimates title gets none whatsoever?
Well, I think a lot of it is, again, the delays between issues, the inability of the creative team, for whatever reason, and I'm not trying to slam the creative teams on it.
Right.
They aren't able to get it out on a regular basis. It's harder for it to build up momentum.
Right.
Although clearly there was momentum there to be had, witnessed by the fact the sales didn't just tank. I think a lot of titles, particularly ones that weren't as strong, would have seen a huge drop-off in sales with that kind of delay. Now, I'll admit, when I read the final issue of Ultimates 2, I had no memory of what the hell had happened before.
Right.
Because I read over 100 comics a month. 8 months, that's the better part of 1,000 comic books later for me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're the exception.
I certainly think so, yes.
Or maybe not, I don't know.
Well, I think there are different profiles of comic book readers out there. I think that certainly I am in one of the more extreme categories. I know a few people that read a lot more than I do, but I think there's also the other extreme where you get people who they're reading maybe nothing but some of the titles from the Ultimates universe.
Right.
So for them, sure, they haven't read many comics in the meanwhile. It's not a big deal for them. Flip side, since they're not reading many comics in the meanwhile, there's less things to pull them back into the store and more of a risk of them being lost when these kinds of delays happen.
Right. But even Marvel has put money behind two animated direct-to-video movies regarding the Ultimates. And you just wonder why they can't put that much... You get whatever, get the creative team, get the money behind it to get this book out, because it's a hot property. It's number three. This book finally comes out and people want it.
Well, it's funny because what you do, you get the people who are drawing the animation for the movie, have them draw the damn comic.
Yeah, that's true.
Clearly they can do 24 frames a second or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Is there going to be an Ultimates 3?
I heard there was, but based on some of the stuff I'm reading in the comics and just the general vibe I'm getting, I am curious what's going to happen with the Ultimate stuff going down the line.
Yeah.
Between things like the crossover with the Supreme Power stuff.
Oh, and they're doing Ultimate Origins, aren't they?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they're doing that, yeah.
I'm starting to wonder if we're going to start to see, we've gotten 100 issues on one of these titles. We've got a lot of stories under the belt. And part of what was the selling point originally for the thing is it was a blank slate. There wasn't all this baggage. Well, now there's baggage.
Now there's baggage, yeah.
You may need to do something about that. So, I mean, who knows if what we see 2 years from now in the Ultimate Universe matches what we're seeing now or not, or if it's an evolution or radical shakeup, if they do something like with what Wildstorm did of essentially rebooting the universe.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt they would do that. I hope they don't do that. I got no reason to think they would. But I think they're at the point where they may, if they're not thinking about shaking it up, maybe they ought to be. And if nothing else, maybe getting things like Ultimates to come out faster.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting is we've talked about three things already, all of which I don't think are any big surprise that they were top-ranked items. But what's interesting is they beat out these next two items.
Mm-hmm.
And these were the other Civil War trades that finally trickled out in June. All the other ones that, of course, come out in the previous 2 months, these were the stragglers. To a certain degree, kind of what's left.
Mm-hmm.
And slot number four is Civil War Iron Man trade paperback with 7,873 units or thereabouts. This is a fairly short trade. Only contains two issues of Iron Man and two of the Civil War one-shots that had both Iron Man and Captain America in it. These are solid numbers for trade. 7,873 units, not bad. But I gotta think it would have done better if there'd simply been more Civil War issues of Iron Man to put in there. I am underwhelmed by how this did, and frankly by the contents of it. And then we get to the Civil War Marvel Universe one, which came in right below it, and did 6,916 units. They may as well have called this the initiative sampler.
Right.
Two of the issues contained were essentially samplers for the new titles. The other two were almost random choices. I mean, a She-Hulk issue 8? What the hell? I mean, even so, again, sales were good. But I can't see this one. I mean, maybe the Iron Man will see some reorder activity, but for this one, not at all. I will be shocked if we see this back on the list next month or in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this was the whatever's left trade.
Well, I can't remember what was in Confession.
The Confession had two storylines and kind of a, this is what I'm thinking, this is why I did what I... You know what? Kind of a...
Okay.
The Rationale might have been a better title.
Okay. The Rationale.
It was
Most
okay.
People wouldn't know what that word means.
Well, then there's another book, The Dictionary.
Yeah. Because Casualties of War, that was the Kingpin, right? Behind bars?
No, that was War Crimes.
I'm sorry, War Crime. See, I'm getting my war mix up there.
Casualty of War, I think, was the one that was essentially the sampler for titles like Iron Fist.
Okay. Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right.
I mean, between that and the Initiative one, which was samplers for, like, Omega Flight and that kind of crap.
Yeah, Blade or something.
Was there a full story to be had in this trade, you know, other than maybe the She-Hulk issue or whatever?
Yeah.
And it's funny because I guess it was the Choosing Sides ones, actually, that had the sampler stuff. It had some of the Daredevil, Iron Fist, the
that's USA... That's in the Marvel Universe.
Oh, that's in the Marvel one. I'm sorry, yeah. I'm getting them confused. But, I mean, that one, how many of these things are already over and done with? I almost think they would have been better off taking these two trades and combining them into one.
Yeah, well, I think She-Hulk was collected twice, wasn't it?
There was issue 8 in the Marvel Universe one.
She had her own trade. Yeah, Laws of Attraction came out. That collected 6 through 13. It had 8 in it, yeah.
So 8 was twice then.
Yeah, 5 months prior, yeah. Or, well, 3 months prior, yeah.
Interesting. So one of the things they picked up for this was not only random, but already reprinted.
Yeah.
you got to think that, that people who are following the Civil War stuff so closely in trade, they pick up this trade, which is the whatever's left trade, clearly. They're going to be a little bummed if I already have a third of it.
Right.
I think they could have handled this better.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, they could have had an expanded trade and sold it for $17 or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, how much? Well, let's see. What was the price on the Iron Man one? It was...
Both of them were $12.
They're both $12. So combine them and sell them for, what, $19.99. Get a double-sized trade. You
combine
know?
Them, take out the She-Hulk issue and the $19.99.
And call it Iron Man and the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I don't know.
If we ran editorial at Marvel, we'd be doing stuff differently.
Yes. Not necessarily better, but certainly
not better. We're not saying it's better. Just different.
Hey, it's easy for me to armchair quarterback and question some of the decisions these guys are making, but...
No, sure.
I mean, seriously, if I knew what would sell and what wouldn't, I would be running one of these companies and making millions of dollars, but...
Or at least, no, $12 an hour.
At least $12. maybe $12.50. Maybe. Yeah. Well, let's move on to Dark Horse's first entry into the top 100 this month.
A great series that I'm getting.
I'm still not reading this, and I should be.
I love series. It's fun.
I need to go pick these up. This is Star Wars Clone Wars Adventures. This is Volume 8. This did 6,575 units. That is up about 150 or so, a little over that, from Volume 7, which is about 2 1/3% gain, a little over that. This volume had the strongest opening numbers on record since the first volume. This series of trades has been having an upward trend since Volume 5. Now, interesting, there was a noticeable drop-off between Volumes kind of 4 and 5 of this series, and it's taken until this volume for that series to kind of climb out of that valley it fell into. Now, the first volume is still the one with both the strongest opening numbers and strongest overall sales on record. Now, this series sells more like a traditional periodical than a collect edition. Now, that's, of course, because it's essentially being a trade paperback-sized periodical and not a collection of previously released material. So it makes sense.
Yeah, it's all new material. It's digest-sized, actually.
Ah, I've got to pick these up.
Yeah, no, they're fun. They're three stories in them. They're really quick to read. They all take place during the Clone Wars. They're all done by the same guys who did the animated show.
Cool.
You know, that's the style that it's in. And I think I wrote you in my email, they said there's only going to be volume 9 and volume 10 left in the series. And then they're gonna end it.
Interesting. Are they going to follow it up with something else?
They haven't said.
Huh.
I think they pretty much told all they can tell within the Clone Wars time period.
Well, and I respect them trying to get out clean at a high point and just milk it for all it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting from a sales perspective on this is there has been no recorded reorder activity for the series on the monthly charts for any of the volumes. Now, we know that at least volumes 5 and 6 had some reorder activity that didn't make the monthly top 100 list in 2006. Now, presumably, we're going to see that again with at least one or two of the volumes during 2007 when the year-end list is released for that. Because that information isn't really solid information but kind of ballpark guesstimates, I don't include that in this analysis I do on the monthly lists.
Yeah.
But it was 700 or so possible reorder units for Volume 5, maybe 1,700 for the other one. Significant numbers, but not solid enough to include in my number crunching on this. But it's interesting some of the stuff that the year-end information kind of implies. This is one that I gotta think is doing gangbusters in the mass market. Between the $6.95 price point, the whole Star Wars aspect to it, the digest size, it just seems like such a no-brainer.
And it's great for young kids to pick up, too.
Yeah.
You know, and this is for all ages. It really is.
That's cool. I should go hit the local comic shop this weekend, and, well, we're gonna have a hurricane, whatever, but I should go pick this up at some point. Let's go back to DC's entry on the list. It's slot number 7. That would be Justice League of America Volume 1, or as I would like to call it, Justice League of America Volume 2, Volume 1 Trade. I hate when they reuse titles. Actually, this is a hardcover, my mistake, not a trade. Hardcover. 5,568 units. Now, these aren't bad opening numbers, but they are a drop in the bucket compared to how the component issues did. The lowest-selling component issue was number 6, because it collects issues 1 through 6, and that sold 131,736 units. This trade only moved about 4.25% of that minimum number of units, and only about 2.25% of the number of units moved by the top-selling component issue, which, of course, was issue number one. Now, there were multiple covers on those issues, so those numbers may be a little inflated compared to how many people were reading, etc., etc. But using the cover price of the trade and component issues for purposes of doing a dollar-to-dollar kind of comparison, this trade yielded an estimated $139,594.14 in sales, compared to the estimated total of $3,267,245.77 in sales of the component issues. That means this trade only did about 4.25% of the dollars that the component issues did. So we're talking a huge difference between how much money the DC made off the monthly issues versus this trade. Now, this is only the opening numbers for the trade, and we're only using the cover prices for point of comparison, not claiming that all the units sold or sold for full cover price. I mean, retailers buy at discounted levels based on their volume of purchases they make. But as far as publishers are concerned, in the direct market, it's the sales to retailers that count. And again, we're talking a huge difference of over $3 million between this trade and its component issues.
That is amazing. I mean, what do you think?
Or this hardcover, my mistake, yeah.
What do you think they should have done? Should they have made a $15 trade? I mean, what could they have done to boost their sales on this?
I think if it had been a trade, it might have sold a little bit better. Would it have sold a statistically significant amount better than the component issues? I doubt it. I mean, even if it was half the price and it was a trade, I don't know that it would have topped, say, 10,000 units for the trade.
Mm-hmm.
Even that seems very generous. It probably would have done, I'm going to say, closer to the 8,000 mark, maybe. And this is just kind of off-the-cuff guesses. I certainly think going for a trade would have been a better move. You could always go for the hardcover later. People might have upgraded, whatever. But the bottom line is, as much as people are waiting for the trades, as much as some people may say, gosh, I think they should just flip over to trades and stuff like that, it is, at the moment, completely not really a viable option for Marvel and DC. Now, for other publishers, it's a totally different ballgame. But, again, at the upper end of the chart, both in terms of the individual titles for trades and comics and in terms of the overall market share and stuff, I don't think DC made a mistake putting this as a hardcover, but there's just a world of difference between how trades sell right now in the direct market and how comics sell right now in the direct market. I really think what DC and Marvel need to do, they need to start looking at how Dark Horse is operating and how it's got a more level presence between the comics and the trades. I think Marvel and DC need to start doing more original hardcover and graphic novel things, start testing the water on that. It has been, 5 years since we got the JLA Earth 2 hardcover,
mm-hmm.
which was one of the last original content hardcover type things I think DC's done for their mainstream universe.
Yeah.
Until we start seeing how those do compared to an average title, it's a little unfair. Obviously, if this had been an original, never done as monthly comics, oh, it would have done in the potentially 20,000. Easily, it could have done as high as, 30 or 40,000, potentially, maybe even more. It's hard to know.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was noticing just the huge difference in how much, money they're bringing in from the two formats, I don't think most people realize that.
I don't even see the trade on my radar for this book.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no point doing a trade.
No, there isn't. But now it's interesting that this book's $25, and the Justice Society of America hardcover, which is coming out September 19th, is $20.
How many issues does that have? It probably only has 5.
It doesn't say. I don't have a read on what exactly it's collecting. But it's probably 5. Prior to the Lightning Saga. Whatever.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Which they'll do as another hardcover.
They'll do something, yeah.
Now, we're probably not going to see a trade of this until a year from now.
Probably. Yeah, you're probably right.
That seems to be how long the lag is between the two formats, whichever comes first. Of course, with DC, it's a lot harder to know than with Marvel. They don't seem to do it quite as much like clockwork. This is one of their premier titles. It was the first hardcover for it. Based on past trends, numbers for future ones are going to be lower than this.
Mm-hmm.
Although with the Lightning Saga, hard to say, because again, it's a crossover. It gets the JSA stuff.
Well, especially on this Volume 1, they really had Brad Meltzer's name right on top of it. Which, as well, they should. He did Identity Crisis, which was great. But boy, they really, Brad Meltzer on Justice League of America kind of thing. that sold this book really, really well, and it showed.
It's funny because I think that name means more to non-comic book readers than comic book readers.
Right.
And I certainly think they should market it that way. I don't see any problem with that. I question how effective that really is.
Mm-hmm.
The mistake I'm seeing that DC is making on the Justice League title, they've been pushing so hard, Brad Meltzer this, Brad Meltzer that, and stuff, which again, he deserves. I got no problem with that. He's done a great job. I'm enjoying the run. He's getting off. Dwayne McDuffie's coming on. People are going to be looking at the sales of the first few issues of the Dwayne McDuffie stuff to say, is it good? Are people liking it? Are they not? Dwayne McDuffie is getting rooked on this. He is getting completely clobbered because most of these issues Brad Meltzer's been doing have had multiple covers.
Right.
They've had whatever the base cover is. They've had a Michael Turner variant. Sometimes they've had two normal covers in the Michael Turner variant. All of that is stopping as of the first issue of Dwayne McDuffie's run-up.
Mm.
So that means you're not only comparing Brad Meltzer, the writer, to Dwayne McDuffie, the writer, but you're comparing the main cover plus variant cover to just Dwayne McDuffie with the cover he gets.
Mm.
And that is so unfair to Dwayne McDuffie. Part of why I've never been a big fan of variant covers to begin with. They skew the numbers.
Right.
And this is a case where it could do potentially a significant amount of harm both to Dwayne McDuffie and to the title in general. I would think if I were at DC and I had the opportunity to take the guy who'd been pretty much running the Justice League cartoon that people seem to love and who is a known and respected quantity as a comic book writer already, and get him on the book, I would do whatever I can to set him up for success.
Mm.
I think if they had handled it better, had marketed it better, they could have made it almost impossible for Dwayne McDuffie to fail on the book, and that would have done everybody some good. As it is, I certainly don't think he's going to just completely flop. I think he's a very talented writer. I think it's an uphill battle for him, and I think that's unfair.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we shall see. And this is something I'm happy to be wrong about. So, Dwayne McDuffie, prove me wrong, have all your fans buy zillions of copies, and let's see the numbers shoot up.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to watch, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's a good storyline.
I haven't really been looking too much at the solicits for what the storyline's going to be about.
No.
But I have a lot of respect for Dwayne McDuffie as a writer. He brought us Static. He's done some great stuff on the Justice League cartoon. He did some great stuff on Batman Legends of the Dark Knight. He's done some fun stuff over at Fantastic Four right now for Marvel. He's got a track record. I think he's a very underrated writer, and I would like to see that turn around for him.
Who's the artist, do you know?
No idea.
No idea, yeah.
For titles like Justice League that I know I'm getting, when I see the stuff in previews, I just kind of skim over and say, yeah, put it down on my order and move on.
Right. Right.
I like to read the contents of the story in the story, and I have a horrible memory for names. So I wouldn't remember the artist anyways. Let's move on to number 8. Would be the Hellboy Animated Volume 2 Judgment Bell trade paperback that did 5,288 units. Now that's down about 1,918 units, which is about a 26.5 or so, a little over drop from that first volume. Again, slightly higher than normal second issue drop, which, you know, I'm going to say is around 22% or so. And that's for comics. Again, this is new material, not a collection of previously released material, so it makes sense it follows the trend for a periodical comic. Now, you had asked or mentioned this on email, and I really wish I knew where to get the information about how this was comparing to how the DVDs were doing.
Well, not only that, but if the DVDs had something to do with them, you know, help selling the book, you know, cost promotion, marketing.
Yeah,
it's that sort of thing. That's all.
I think it's a great question. I really wish I could answer it. Mm. I haven't been following these DVDs. I'll be honest, I don't really follow Hellboy.
Mm-hmm.
But got to think that with these sales numbers, something's going on here, because these are pretty good numbers. And be it just because Hellboy had the movie, he's got the animated stuff, I think without all of that, any Hellboy trade would have been a lot lower on the list.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got nothing I can really quantify it against in terms of, like I said, how the DVDs are doing or if they're doing any cross promotion or anything.
Yeah, I just kind of threw it out there. That's all.
No, I think it's you know, it's good. If I wish I could answer that. I'm curious about it.
Well, I think with the movie helped create a brand new audience for Hellboy and the whole franchise and kind of re-kickstart it. Because ever since the movie, you've had the animated stuff come along, these trades come along, and I think the younger generation has found Hellboy and Nola's work.
I would agree with that, and certainly there's the power of, you know, again, movies, DVDs, etc. But as a counterpoint to that, let's go ahead and jump down to item 26 for a second,
mm-hmm.
and that's the Transformers movie trade paperback from IDW. Now, this did 3,098 units, or right around there, so we'll say 3,100. This seems like really low numbers, given that the movie was released at the beginning of July, and we're looking at the June numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have expected the anticipation of that movie in June would have helped this trade do a lot better. I mean, these aren't poor sales in general, but for a property with a major summer blockbuster, and it's got the nostalgia thing going, it's got brand recognition, these are really lackluster opening numbers. It seems to be that what was working for Hellboy didn't for Transformers.
Yeah, yeah, which is surprising, because the movie did so well.
There's a lot to be said for the strength of licensed properties, but obviously they're not a ticket to success.
Yeah.
This isn't a failure again, but there's no reason this couldn't have done twice the numbers it did, if not higher.
Well, IDW has been cranking out Transformers books the past few months.
That's
just
true.
Just cranking it out. I mean, every month, I mean, I made a joke out of it.
My
weekly rundown, I mean, you know, if it's not a book without Transformers, it doesn't really count. You know?
Now, do you think they kind of pulverized whatever marketability the property had?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you had... You know, they also offered the Transformers prequel as part of Free Comic Book Day. I mean, they did very well promotion as far as it, but as far as reading the trade, I don't know why this hasn't sold, you know, better. It's just kind of odd. It all goes back to what I was saying months ago, John, where you have a blockbuster movie like this, there should be some little outlet, the mall movie theater,
yeah.
where you can buy this book right away or buy merchandise right away. You know, selling t-shirts or selling coffee mugs along with comic books, you know, to hype up the movie or, you know, the animated stuff on DVD or whatever. I mean, there's got to be some marketability for that, you know.
Well, this is something that would not surprise me at all if I were to find out that in the mass market, the Borders, the Barnes & Nobles, Amazon, wherever, that if this trade just did gangbusters.
Yeah.
Because it's entirely possible that the target audience are more likely to be there than at a comic store or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't know how this is doing in the mass market. I don't have that information, but I could certainly imagine it doing very well there.
Mm-hmm.
People go to a movie, the next place they're liable to see this kind of a trade or whatever is, I would think, more likely going to be a Barnes & Noble and Borders than a comic store. Do we want to go through the other two items on the top 10 or kind of skip over?
Well, just mention them real quick.
Death Note Volume 12, which did 4,948 units. That's up about 10% from the previous volume. There's an increase of 450 or so, which is good. I don't read Death Note. I've got vague familiarity with the concept of the guy gets the notebook and writes names, people die. I can see the appeal of the premise. Number 10 slot is Ultimate Fantastic Four, Volume 8, Devils. This is also a trade paperback. It did 4,937 units. This is up a little over 400 units from Volume 7, which is about a little under a 9% bump up. Not bad sales for either, but nothing that just really jumped out at me saying, oh, wow.
What issues does this collect?
This collects Ultimate Fantastic Four 39 through 41 and Annual Number 2.
I thought they were higher up on that numbering right now.
Now, didn't they collect all the annuals in a trade paperback last year?
Ultimate Annuals?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did that. Mm-hmm.
Aren't they doing that again this year? I'm puzzled by the Annual 2 being in here, because usually the annuals are kind of standalone stories, and I'm wondering if they're going to reprint the annual in this and a separate one with the other annuals.
I do not have Ultimate Annuals number 2 anywhere on my list.
Okay, so they may not be doing one then.
Yeah, I don't have one.
At some point, I may have to dig around on the other Ultimate stuff to see if any of the other previous trades for Ultimate FF included the first annual or not.
Yeah.
I'm just curious if they're kind of double-dipping or triple-dipping on that.
Yeah, they could be. They very well could be.
Hey, if it works.
Yeah.
Can't say that I blame them.
Then you can click it twice, just like She-Hulk number 8.
Yeah. Or three times if you got the monthly.
Yeah, exactly. Get the hardcover.
God, yeah.
So what else you want to go over real quick?
Let's see. Item 13, Civil War trade paperback, had decent reorder activity. Another 4,293 units. This is strong.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm curious if once the Civil War Chronicles hit, if that's going to impact this or not. But I really don't think we're ever going to know for sure, because it could just be the Civil War trade would have, you know, kind of tapered off in sales anyways.
Right.
But this is a good sign for the strength of the property. Item 16, Showcase Presents Atom Volume 1. This did a little over 3,600 units. Now, given the whole search for Ray Palmer going on in Countdown, I really would have hoped that the Showcase Presents would have opened stronger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these aren't bad opening numbers. They just seem a little weak, particularly for a showcase. I gotta think it wouldn't have been too hard to market this book better, to sell it better, maybe also have it come out with a trade, because they're doing the trade of the Sword of the Atom stuff.
I can't wait for that. That's gonna be good stuff.
Oh, that's excellent stuff. I loved that.
Oh, that's a long time coming right there.
I just gotta think, if they had put this and that and timed it better and hyped it better with the search for Ray Palmer, they could have gotten some real excitement going about the character, could have gotten some really good sales. Mm-hmm. I just think they kind of dropped the ball.
Are you reading the all-new Atom right now?
Oh, yeah.
You like it?
I'm an issue behind. Overall, I'm kind of liking it.
Yeah.
I don't like the basic premise of the young prodigy taking over for Ray and being the uber young professor.
Well, I mean, it happens in Flash all the time, though, with a young speedster coming along. I mean, you know, so it kind of cycles, though, don't you think?
I think so, but instead of having the really young kid with the elder professors as his council of advisors or whatever, I think it could have been really interesting
mm-hmm.
if they had kind of broken format, stay with him being Asian, I got no problem with that, have him be maybe 50, 60, have him have grad students filling the role of his advisors or whatever.
Yeah.
Have him be a bit more of the older guy who's still the rookie. I think there could have been an interesting dichotomy there. I don't think what they're doing is bad. I thought it got off to a weak start. The whole little quote thing they're doing in the book doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
The rotating artists, not working for me. I like Mike Norton's work. Some of the other artists were good. Oddly enough, I'm going to say John Byrne's work didn't work for me. I thought it was so cliche, John Byrne work. I swear I had seen those panels in other books. Now, part of that, he's got such a consistent style to his work. I think that's part of it. I've been underwhelmed, but part of it is I really, really loved the Sword of the Atom, the Power of the Atom, some of the other stuff they did with Ray Palmer. For me, this series had a lot to live up to and hasn't quite done that.
It's such a cool character, though. It really is.
Yeah.
As far as, like, miniature characters, I like him so much better than Ant-Man.
I would agree with that.
Going back and comparing, like, the Ant-Man Masterworks to the Atom Masterworks, or the Atom Archives, you know, Ray Palmer's so cool.
Oh, yeah.
He really is
yeah.
a cool character.
And I like how they've done some stuff of kind of bringing back the Ivy University, the whole, you know, he kind of messed up the rules of physics there
yeah.
and that kind of bit to it. That's cool. I like that. I hope when Countdown is done that the Atom goes from being kind of a second string character to a potential front runner.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't happen, I think that DC needs to take some of these Justice Leaguers that are in that boat of almost but not quite being able to maintain a series and do something to reinvigorate the excitement in those characters and the interest in those characters.
Right.
Because you've got Atom, you've got Firestorm, you've got Aquaman, you've got Hawkman, you've got Martian Manhunter that are Justice Leaguers that almost can keep a series going, but not quite.
Well, Martian Manhunter can't. Seeing him phase out around, you know, between issues 15 and 25 too many times. You know, now he's in the Outsiders, and he's kind of, you know, we don't know if he's a bad guy or a good guy kind of thing. We don't know what's going on with him as far as
yeah,
in the Martian brain of his, so we'll see.
It just seems like you could take all these characters, form a team around them, and potentially have something that could hold its own. But Justice League, the leftovers.
But you got to have Batman, though. You could do it without Batman. Which I'm being sarcastic when I say that.
I wish
they didn't have to have Batman. I wish they just couldn't do, like, you know, the outside, new Outsiders, or what is it? I mean, he's Batman and the Outsiders, right?
I have reservations about that title. And I mean the title literally, because you look at that, you look at Infinity Inc., it's almost like it's old home week at DC.
And Suicide Squad's going to come back.
It's they're trying to bring back the 80s. And I enjoyed the 80s. I mm-hmm. loved the comics then. They need to be targeting today's readers. And I'm not convinced they're doing that.
Well, I just wish, do they have to have Batman in every single title? I mean, you know, there was a time where he was in a ton of titles, and then he scaled him back, and now he's right back in the thick of things again with Superman, Batman, and you know, his new Outsiders and...
I don't mind him being in a bunch of titles if they're good,
yeah.
But like Superman, Batman, they need to cancel.
You think so? About time?
Yeah. It's funny because if you look at the list, item 14 is volume 5 of Superman, Batman hardcover.
Yeah.
4,212 units. That's down about 26.5% almost from the previous volume.
Yeah.
This series is creatively, I think, somewhat bankrupt. It's completely lost direction. It's completely lost focus. Any and all buzz it may have had died around issue 27. It is amazing how it went from being a good book, a cool book, or whatever, to one that was just kind of late, to one that was really late, to they're still publishing this? What are they thinking?
Is this book in continuity?
Yeah.
I
don't know why.
I don't think it should be in continuity. I think it would be better off if it was a separate title, have them in both, like, year two or year three of their titles. Kind of like what they're doing with Confidential.
Which, it's funny, because I'm not getting Batman Confidential.
Yeah.
I've only picked up the first handful of Superman Confidential on a, well, I'll give it a shot. If they don't care enough about the book to put it in continuity, why should I care enough about the book to buy it? That's just my opinion.
Well, what about All-Star Batman and Superman?
All-Star Batman, I think the less said, the better.
Really?
I'm an issue behind on that, but I'm surprised they got another issue out. All-Star Superman, I'm liking.
Yeah, but you see what I mean, though. There's so many titles, though. I don't know. It would have been cool to grab those storylines, I guess, and of the Confidential storylines and put them in the Superman-Batman storyline kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe.
And do it that way and just put non-continuity, I guess. I don't know. Something different. Or make, like, original graphic novels of those stories or something.
Yeah, that could be cool.
You know?
The problem I have with the whole, oh, just take it out of continuity, is people use that, well, I can either tell a good story or I can have it in continuity. And it's like, you can't have both. To hell with that. You can have both. Continuity does not preclude good stories. Good stories do not preclude continuity.
But look at the continuity right now in DC with Countdown going on and Amazon's attack and JLA trying to get back.
That's not continuity. That's, well, crossovers.
Yeah.
And they're not totally separate.
Is there a fine line, though?
You can have continuity is basically saying that what happened happened. Maybe not exactly how I thought it happened, maybe not exactly why I thought it happened, but what I read counts. It matters. It's not just, oh, throw it away, ignore it.
So you don't have to have Countdown going on, you know, one little page here in a Batman Superman title?
No, to me, that's not part and parcel of continuity.
Okay.
Continuity is the All-Star Squadron and Infinity Inc. stories I read back in the 80s. Still have repercussions to some minor degree, are still in the backstory of what's going on in the Justice Society series today.
Okay.
It's not, oh, they've got to cross over, or even, oh, they've got to explicitly reference that. It's just a matter of kind of where it makes sense to acknowledge those stories did happen, there is a history to these characters, which makes the characters all the more real, making it easier for the readers to identify with and get interested in emotionally invested in those characters, which I would hope would increase sales. Because one of the things that I think decreases sales is when people don't give a damn about what's going on to the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And continuity, I think, can help do that. When it gets to the point of the intertwined stories and crossovers, to me, that's not continuity. That's a sales gimmick. It can be done mm-hmm. well. I really loved the Lightning Saga. That was a crossover with JLA, JSA, and the continuity of the old Legion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really loving Countdown. I'm very disappointed with it. I'm a few issues behind, but it's disjointed. It is hard to follow. I don't know what order to read anything in, and it doesn't really give me any sense of payoff for the continuity.
And I think it's only going to get worse.
I don't know. They switched editors partway through, and Mike Carlin is taking over, which surprised me. Mike Carlin's a great guy. I thought he did a wonderful job back when the Superman books were essentially weekly, but I also would have thought that that would have cured him of any desire to ever do that sort of thing again. But I'm very pleased with that because he's a very talented editor, one respectful of what DC's published in the past. But man, I think Countdown is in such a sad shape where I'm at. The only part I'm really, really liking is the backup feature of the History of the Multiverse.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Yeah.
But that's because I'm a geek for that kind of stuff. I love parallel timelines, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's just the problem with Countdown isn't continuity, it's incoherence and lackluster art in a few issues. I'm going to be very, very curious to see how that does when it gets collected. And part of that is if we jump down right now to rank 79, we got first issue of 52 comes back for some reorder activity. and it moved another 1,482 units, bringing it to a total of recorded sales of 10,237 units.
Yeah, very poor performance, I think.
Yeah, this is weak.
That's real weak, yeah.
Walking Dead had better reorder activity for the first volume. Now, Walking Dead, great book, people love it and stuff. It's been on the charts more often than it hasn't been. 52, if we don't start seeing some healthy reorder activity for this when Volume 2 or the later volumes come out, I think that's a sad comment on the long-term sales, or more likely the lack of long-term sales that this trade may have, or the series of trades may have. It's funny, because this volume's been kind of circulating around my office, and I've been, you know, trying to solicit, you know, hey, what do you guys think of it? And one guy read it, and it's like, well, there was no Superman, there was no Batman, there was no Wonder Woman. I didn't know these are the characters. I didn't care about these other characters. It was blah. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay. And, you know, I'm trying to say, hey, give it some more time, get into the other stories, because they're only, I don't know that anyone at the office has necessarily made it through the entire first volume, but we've been on crunch mode. There's other reasons.
Yeah. It's definitely a diehard DC book.
I think it's one that is a potential entry ramp if you can get people to read it.
Mm-hmm.
It lacks a clear sales pitch. It lacks a clear hook. It lacks a clear through line. And it started a little slow. So I think if you can get people past that first volume, a little ways into the second, that's when a lot of the storylines really start to kick into high gear. Some interesting stuff happens. And then I think people might get hooked. That's too far in for it to work for a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to see very similar stuff, if not worse, on Countdown. Because if Countdown gets collected in the same sort of quarterly manner like 52, the problem is going to be you're not going to have all the crossover issues. And I don't know how coherent the story is going to be without them.
Right.
I'm not entirely convinced it's totally coherent with them. But what do I know? It's not like I'm the target audience for this, although I think I most definitely am. I mean, I'm a hardcore DC fan. I've been reading pretty much every mainstream DC comic book in the DCU for longer than I can remember, since Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah.
I'm not scared by the continuity. I'm not scared by new stuff getting introduced or even the changes they made with Infinite Crisis. And I'm just not invested in the story. It hasn't engaged me as a reader. And again, when the backup feature is what I'm looking forward to, something's not working.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm the only person who feels this way. So that worries me. I am at the point where my faith in DC coming out with some really solid products and really getting some momentum going, I just don't have that faith right now. And I think they made a couple of missteps, be it with World War III.
Yeah.
1 year later, started really strong, and then things tanked. Well, tanked is a hard word. Things trailed off to the point at which a year and a half later, comparatively, they have tanked.
Yeah.
I certainly didn't think everything from 1 year later would click with the readers and everything would work. I think the nature of that sales stunt prevented that. They were very successful in getting everybody to try everything, or at least a lot of people to try a lot of things, which meant a lot of people were going to have to cut back. So things were going to drop off. It just seems like none of the titles clicked. And, you know, we seem to be heading towards another final, quote-unquote, crisis, the end of Countdown. And you can only go to that well so many times. If DC can't come out with a solid lineup and some stable sellers out of Final Crisis, they're in big trouble. Now, I say that, and people are going to say, oh, they're not going to go under. I'm not saying they're going to go under. I'm saying they're in trouble, and they're going to have to go to essentially the skeet mentality they've got now, where it's literally like watching skeet shooting. Somebody yells pull, they throw out a half a dozen different miniseries, they see what gets shot down, they reload, they yell pull again, somebody mm-hmm. shoots out the next round, and that's a bad publishing plan.
Well, that's why I think they should totally scale back on many, many, many of their titles.
People keep saying that,
you know?
And on the one hand, I don't disagree. On the other hand, it is this volume of material that is keeping the sales going, keeping the money coming in, keeping the cash flowing.
It is. You're right.
I mean, you were asking earlier about the market share. More things mean higher ratings in the market share.
Mm-hmm.
There is some truth to that. But then we get to Trials of Shazam. Rank 22, the first volume of this trade, which collects the first half of the 12-issue miniseries, 3,266 units. This series has been losing readers on the comic book side of the equation and has lost over 40% of the initial units. And it sure doesn't look like they were waiting for the trades.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least if they were, they still are. his trade sold about 10% with that last component issue sold. And again, that thing's been going down. Now, the bi-monthly frequency on the comic book side of things certainly hadn't helped the series build up any momentum. In an ideal world, again, armchair quarterbacking, so take it with a grain of salt, I think what DC could have been better off doing is if they had released this and the Black Adam miniseries that had started up, if they had released both of these on a weekly basis and used them to kind of bridge the gap between the events near the end of 52 and kind of the what's going on in Countdown, and use that to span that gap, I certainly think Trials of Shazam on a weekly basis would have been able to build up some steam, get some momentum with the readers. Certainly doing it closer to the end of 52 would have gone with that excitement. As it is, Trials of Shazam lost any buzz it may have ever had, and I'm not sure it had a whole lot, because it was one that came out of the Brave New World round of skeet shooting. And it's really frustrating to see all the work that was done in 52 kind of rebuilding the viability of the whole Shazam family of characters essentially get squandered by this series. Mm-hmm. And it's not a bad series. I'm liking it. It's just slow to come out.
I think this series got lost with Jeff Smith's series. And you know, you had two Shazam miniseries come out essentially at the same time.
Yeah.
And one had, you know, in the wake of 52, and the other had a brand new retelling of the origin by Jeff Smith with his name, you know, again, right on top of the book. And people said, oh, I'm going to buy Jeff Smith stuff.
I've got those four issues sitting in my to-read stack. I picked them up late. Mm-hmm. I was going to wait for the trade, but then they went to a hardcover instead.
Yeah.
Serves me right. I think you're right. I hadn't factored that in on my thinking.
Yeah.
I should have.
That's what I'm here for. Yeah,
that, exactly. Otherwise, I'd be doing this myself.
What fun would that be?
I like having somebody to point out these things, because I'm forgetful, I'll admit this. I mean, do you think this would have done better as a weekly thing versus a essentially bi-monthly?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it just took too long to come out.
I mean, I can't imagine the second volume doing any better than this first one. And given the way the sales are dropping off on the monthly side, I gotta think that 2,000 units for the second volume may be optimistic. And I think that the message this sends to the readers and the retailers is, we're putting this out for 12 issues, we'll do it in two trades. That's how much faith we have in the property. That already gives people kind of a hesitation and wait-and-see approach.
Mm.
Then it comes out on a bi-monthly basis, meaning they couldn't get it out on time.
Yeah, that's bad.
Certainly, getting it out weekly might not have been possible. You know, given the span between issues, it's unlikely. But it builds up a lack of faith, goes towards a general cynicism to the audience. And certainly, I fall prey to this. I'll admit this. But when I see something that certainly, looking at 52 and stuff, they did so much great work, both with Black Adam and just by extension, all of the other characters in that group. I think had they done a few things a little differently in 52, they could have come out with an essentially a Shazam family equivalent to Birds of Prey,
mm-hmm.
where it's kind of a rotating group of some of the characters from that Fawcett library. As it is, this relaunch of, you know, Shazam, Captain Marvel in Trials of Shazam, kind of a flop.
Mm-hmm.
I don't expect the stuff for Black Adam to be a huge sales success. It's too far after 52 and the momentum the character had there. And some of the stuff in Countdown, I think, kind of... I mean, the storyline seems to be what happened to the character between when he was last seen in 52 and when he's first seen in Countdown.
Right.
We've already seen him in Countdown. We know where the story ends.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a good move. So, again, I'm frustrated by this. I don't think DC has ever known what to do with that group of characters. 52 showed that they are still viable and if properly used, could do pretty well. And now we're back to they don't know what to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of another thing they don't know what to do with, right below that, you got the Gotham Central Volume 5 Dead Robin trade paperback.
Right.
They have been taking forever to come out with these trades. Now, I think, but I'm not positive, that this would be the last one for the series, because I think it goes up through 40, and I don't remember if Gotham Central lasted much past that.
I think that's about right.
This is only down about 30 or less units from the previous volume. That's negligible drop. And that volume was only down about 200 units from the one before it. And this series has done modest sales and trade, but stable sales and trade. That's got to be worth something. This is good sales for content that was originally released in late 2005, early 2006. It's not new material. People have been patiently waiting for it. I'm a little surprised that this didn't seem to get any kind of a bump or benefit from 52 and or Tales of Suspense Spectre. Two of the leads from this series have gone on to do other things, yet we're seeing a minor drop versus any kind of a gain. Again, this is another one. DC had some good stuff, but they couldn't market it right, or it didn't click with the readers, it clicked with a subset of the readers, certainly, but disappointing. I don't know why they couldn't turn this into a successful ongoing.
Mm. Yeah, that was a pretty good series. It seemed to end right when 52 was coming along. It ended right during 52, yeah. Didn't it, with the whole Rene Montoya and everything?
Right before Infinite Crisis.
Infinite Crisis, yeah, that's it, yeah.
And, you know, I gotta question the wisdom of taking two very strong, what were supporting characters but became lead characters that were some of the few non-superhero lead characters that DC had, and then turning them into superheroes.
Right.
Not saying it was a bad move. I thought the Question arc in 52 was really good. It just sends, again, a very bad signal to a certain degree of, if you like normal characters, don't worry, eventually we'll put them in spandex or the equivalent thereof. About the only other one I really want to talk about is at rank 35. That's the first volume of the Lone Ranger trade paperbacks from Dynamite. This did 2,671 units. I'm a little disappointed by that. I read the first six issues of this not too long ago. They were really good. Both the story and the art on this are top-notch. It's great stuff. You know, I think if they give it a little bit more attention and a bit of a marketing push and get it in front of more readers, this series could do very well for them, both in the monthly format and in trades. Rank 35, not too bad. Under 2,700 units. This has the potential of both coming back on the list, and I think it had the potential of selling better initially, too. But we shall see what happens with this.
It just kind of hurts when you've got a property like The Lone Ranger, which has, you know, stood the test of time, and, you know, with movies and TV and television, that, you know, right now the only thing for this property is a comic book. Where you look at other properties like a Transformers or Battlestar Galactica, and they've got their other avenues to help push the book and find an audience. And Lone Ranger is one of those, you know, my grandfather watched it or my dad watched it kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a little bit of stigmatism with it too, which is really too bad.
Well, it's funny because it could easily have come across as a very dated concept and a period piece and kind of a, you know, not for this audience.
Mm-hmm.
Having read the first seven issues, because I just read the seventh one this past weekend, I would love to see this take on the Lone Ranger turned into a TV show.
Yeah.
It's got a certain spark to it in terms of the way the characters interact. It's just a lot of fun. And if not a TV show, a series of movies, something. I mean, I had watched some of the old stuff on TV where we talked about this before.
Mm-hmm.
I was interested in the character. I'm really hooked on the character now. This is one that I think if people will read it, they will like. They hate Westerns, maybe not, but you know what I mean. It's certainly top quality stuff. I gotta think if it was Marvel or DC that had published this versus Dynamite, that would have gotten it another, you know, 1,000 or two in sales easily, which is unfortunate and somewhat unfair. And you're right, with all the other properties that are out there that are licensed and stuff like that doing pretty well, this is underperforming.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I think that's it, man. I think we covered it all.
There was the Fantastic Four Omnibus down at rank 73, which did 1,536 units, but $99.99, I can understand that. That was the volume two of it.
The Fourth World Omnibus, too.
Oh, yeah.
19, yeah.
Which did 3,423 units. Again, nice to see them collecting this and putting it out there.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been a huge Kirby fan or New Gods fan, but I'm glad to see this being available for new readers.
Yeah, I'm learning to respect Kirby a lot more these days, so I haven't, you know, read Fantastic Four and some other stuff, but I'm getting into a 70s stuff, which is pretty interesting. I picked up the Devil Dinosaur book, and, you know, his command stuff.
Yeah.
Very, very weird, but boy, he had a lot of ideas in that brain of his, though.
Yeah,
sure.
I respect his ideas, his artistic talent and stuff. It's just his style doesn't work for me for some reason.
Yeah, his style. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
But certainly one of the big movers and shakers in the industry. No question about that.
Mm-hmm.
Deservedly so. I think that about wraps us up.
Cool.
You got anything you want to promote on your podcast?
Well, just I did a little rundown of the passing of Mike Waringo, you know, this past weekend.
Right, and tragic loss.
So a little bit about his trades and a little bit about his life. But other than that, I'm going on vacation for about a week, and so I'll be off the computer, which I'll be welcoming that. So, no email, no computer, no nothing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I am going to download a bunch of podcasts before I go. But
cool.
That's it.
Well, there's the 3-hour extravaganza that I did for Comic Timing.
I listened to the first hour of that.
Wow,
already.
You're a trooper. Now, that was fun. It was.
That's all I can bear.
Oh, come on.
No, I'll get through it all.
It is quite a bit. Ian did a good job getting that down to some semblance of almost manageable length. We talked for way too long on that. And then I'll probably have you on, geez, it'll probably be fairly shortly.
In a couple weeks.
Yeah, when the next set of numbers comes out. Took a little longer to schedule this. I apologize for that. But between major death here in Texas that impacted me personally, San Diego Comic-Con, coming back sick from San Diego Comic-Con, and then just getting completely and totally slammed by work to the tune of putting in over 100 hours over the course of 9 days straight.
Jeez. Oh,
just now getting to where I'm slowly starting to catch up on a few things. Hopefully we won't have any of that going forward. Not only can we do the next trade discussion a little more timely, but hopefully I'll be able to start doing the weekly stuff with Bob. I'm looking forward to that. He's on vacation. I've been too busy. Hadn't quite started yet, so it should be fun, though.
Good deal.
Once again, my name is John Mayo. I've been your host here on the Comic Book Page Podcast. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is podcast@comicbookpage.com. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify that you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or excuse, N items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside of Diamond Comics distribution channels is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.